Seema Reza is a poet and essayist based outside of Washington, D.C., where she coordinates and facilitates a unique hospital arts program that encourages the use of the arts as a tool for narration, self-care, and socialization among a military population struggling with emotional and physical injuries. An alumni of VONA and Goddard College, she was awarded the 2015 Kal John Goya Patriot Award by the USO of Metropolitan Washington, Baltimore for her work with service members. When the World Breaks Open is her first book, and it is a memoir, and we are happy to have her on our show. Seema Reza, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thanks for having me.
What a phenomenal, wonderful, amazing, I can't say enough great things about your book, your debut memoir, When the World Breaks Open, out with Red Hand Press. And I was actually thinking earlier as I was driving to the studio, you know, if we had a segment on this show announcing our top picks for the year, your book would be my number one selection, hands down. So anyway, but yeah, it's a great book. How does it feel to have your first book out?
Oh, you know, I've been meeting people who have read it, and I'm just so grateful. You know, writing it was an act of survival.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just really grateful, honestly. it feels really great to have it out, and somebody came up to me with a copy of it that was all flagged and written in, and I wanted to steal it from her and just see what she had underlined.
How long did it take you to write the book?
Oh, from when I actually had the book accepted till now, it was probably 4 years. But I had been writing it for at least a year before that.
Wow, so about 5 years-ish.
Yes, ish.
And then, of course, you know, all the research, which is to say the living of it, you know, a lifetime, you know. But then, okay, so then now after having sort of, you know, labored over this for 5 years, the book finally arrives in boxes at your doorstep, I would imagine. How did that feel when you're going to, like, cracking this book, box of books open?
That's how it felt, really. Just like, wow. You know, to see my name on the spine of a book.
Right.
I write as an excuse almost to read, right? Like,
sure.
I do all this research, yeah. And then I'm, you know.
Right.
And so to actually, books are the thing I respect the most in the world.
Yeah.
So to see my name on a book, 9-year-old Seema, like, just like, could not handle it.
So I'm going to try and I'm going to make an attempt at describing the book. I mean, it's so rich, and it's just a rewarding read. And it's kind of I guess my description of it would be like an unabashed examination of your life as a mother of two boys, a wife who once endured an abusive relationship, and then a kind of a journey toward discovering, I guess, one's own purpose in this crazy world. I mean, would that be a good explanation? Or, I mean, maybe you can tell our listeners what the book is about from your point of view.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you covered definitely the topics. The book is sort of this, like, almost record mm-hmm. of myself changing, this mm-hmm. sort of stepping further into myself,
mm-hmm.
right? This,
right?
Like, there is so much time that we spend early, in our early adulthood particularly.
Right.
Well, let me not speak for we. I'll say for me for sure, trying very hard not to look at ourselves. And so this was this investigation of, like, okay, things have gone to shit. What do I contain? And what do I make with these pieces? So
right.
It was this investigation, really.
Life didn't happen as planned necessarily, and then how do we make sense of that, right?
Right.
I mean, and you do. You totally turn the mirror onto yourself in this book. You know, it's not like you're exempt from the sort of investigation or the scrutiny of what it means to be alive. You know, you actually include your own. I mean, you really are boldly honest with, you know, with yourself and your own experiences as well. And I wondered if you ever said to yourself as you were writing this, my God, am I really going to put this in there? Is this really going to get published?
Oh, definitely, definitely. We, you know, we want to protect ourselves to an extent, but I think that's, I was so focused on the investigation,
mm-hmm.
and I knew that, like, it was about my life. It was about understanding my life, and my mother used to say when I was a kid, when everyone around you is wrong, that means it's time to look at yourself. So it was sort of that, like, well, what is the common denominator in all of these things? Oh, me. So, like, what do I contain? What am I doing? And you know, there were places that I thought about pulling punches, you know, and not talking about things. And certainly, you know, there's other people's feelings involved when you're writing memoir and nonfiction. And how much of other people's stories do I have the right to tell?
And, you know, I mean, even on that note, you know, the book is kind of, you mentioned your mother, her voice, and also the other people who are, you know, subjects in this book. You know, the book is also, as I gathered, it's kind of about inheritances, you know, in a way. You write about the women who raised you, including your mother. You also write about your father and how, you know, the way that they have lived, I guess, gets passed down to us or to you specifically. And also, by extension to your sons, you know, whether we're aware of that or not, we inherit these things. And would you mind talking a little bit about that, the inheritances in the in these stories?
Yeah. I think the thing that's the most terrifying as you're getting older is realizing that you're the age that your parents were.
Yeah.
When they were holding up your whole world.
Right.
And then we look at these ideas, you know, their beliefs were sort of, they're not only their beliefs, but their sort of idiosyncrasies and eccentricities were the laws of the universe when we were small. And then you grow up and you're like, not only are the laws of the universe not necessarily what I thought they were, but I'm setting the laws of somebody else's universe as a parent myself.
Yes.
And that makes every decision so fraught. And that's not something that I can change. My hands are their mother's hands, right? There's nothing I can do about that.
Right.
I am an artifact of their lives.
Right.
For better or worse. And for me, I feel like it's really important that we all remain conscious of that.
That came to mind often, you know, as I was reading your book, this idea of, I mean, I'll never forget when I came to that realization as a parent myself, which was that, you know, when I was young, growing up, you know, the moments like either whether they were holidays or even birthdays or just sort of special moments or even just on the daily, there was a sense of kind of a magic about some of these things. And you know, as a kid growing up, I often just thought the magic was just a part of it. You know, there was magic instantly on the day of your birth, and there was magic on a holiday. Things were just beautiful and wonderful. And, you know, it didn't dawn on me right until I was a parent myself that, oh, wow, like this was actually all fabricated by my parents, you know, like they're the ones who really did the work to create this sense of magic, or they didn't, you know, one or the other, but for me they did. And you know, and then I realized then, wow, what have I been doing or not doing to, you know, not only magic, but even just the sort of the situation, as you called it, the sort of the way the universe works, you know, what am I contributing to that will obviously shapes the way my children see the universe or the world or their reality around them. And so I began to move forward after that with sort of an intentionality, you know, about about what it means to be that for them. And they're sort of the all watchful eye, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. the way that they're not even separate from you. So you're not acting differently around them than you would by yourself. And that's really scary.
Right.
When you sort of, I'm talking to myself the way that I would if I was alone, like all of that stuff, they're really watching all the time.
And, you know, that's what I appreciated about the book as well. Even when you start the passages about your children and the way that you're mothering, you know, you question yourself and then you question them and then you question, you know, you're questioning all of this sort of experience of it in a very honest way. And at the same time, it's like, you know, you're having the conversations that you're sort of, the sort of internal monologues that you're having also are external to with your boys. You know, it's really interesting because you speak to them in the book, in a very intelligent way, and in a very kind of adult way, in the way that you're almost speaking to yourself at times. And so I love that. There was really kind of a blurring of, you know, like what you just said here, which is what we're telling ourselves and the way we speak to ourselves is not separate from the way that we act or speak around them, you know, and I felt that. The title of the book, When the World Breaks Open, why that title? What does it mean to you?
You know, it came from this question that my son asked me. I took my sons on their first vacation with me alone, which was, it was really scary. It was scary to figure out the edges of my competence. Huh. And, you know, they're like, what can I do?
Right.
And I had taken them on this vacation, and it was the first time We went to the beach, and the hotel was not as nice as I thought it looked on the internet. So there's one edge of my competence, Travelocity. But we got there, and it was just the three of us, and I went into the ocean. You know, we took turns, my older son and I, watching my younger son, sort of. And one night, just before they were going to bed and they were having their nightly argument, I don't know if everybody's children do this, but when my kids, they have sort of these rituals of like punching each other and arguing with each other.
Yeah.
That I hope there's some evolutionary value to it. But so they were doing this, and I'm like, what's going on? Just ask me the question. Mm-hmm. And my younger son said, Mama, when the world breaks open, God comes out, right? And I was like, yeah, that's what this feeling is of discovering these, my competencies and my abilities and myself. It's just like all of the structure that had been, I thought, holding me safe and keeping me from having to think about these bigger things, mm-hmm. was actually keeping me from coming fully into the world.
We are speaking with memoirist Sima Reza about her debut book, When the World Breaks Open, which is out with Red Hen Press. The book, in terms of the shape of the book, you know, it's not written in a sort of, I guess a typical memoir as one would expect. It's actually written in these sort of short pieces. Sometimes they're half a page and sometimes they're a few pages long, sometimes lyrical and poetic. Actually, you know what? Would you mind reading us at this point? Would you mind reading us an excerpt or one of the pieces from your book?
Absolutely.
Cool. And for the listener, we are speaking with Sima Reza, and she's going to be reading an excerpt from her book, When the World Breaks Open.
This piece is called Warnings for My Son. The first time I read about the murder of Tamir Rice, a 12-year-old boy shot by Cleveland police for waving a toy gun at a playground, I tell my sons, 8 and 14, to pause the television. We are watching a show called Once Upon a Time, based on fairy tale characters who are dealing with the ultimate curse, reality. I read them the whole article, word for word, from the link I clicked on my Facebook feed. I read them Tamir Rice's father's words. He didn't know what he was doing. He was only 12. They pay attention to my words in the way they only do when I'm telling them something in this tone of voice. A voice I cannot fake. The scared quivering that sounds like a squint. We are cramped on the couch in the apartment we moved to when I left their father. Our legs piled on top of one another. The television is paused on one or another fair-skinned, flowing-haired heroine. On this show, every rescue emerges from doing the easily identified right thing. Every curse is broken by the everlasting magic of true love. I remind them of the rules. No bomb jokes, no tossing around the word terrorist. No sending text messages that could be twisted against you. No buying those stupid dummy grenades you were fascinated by at the Army surplus store. I tell them, I don't want to scare you, but that's not true. I have these conversations with them when I am afraid, when something happens in the news, when I imagine the black tops of their heads in the sights of a drone. As far as I know, the United States doesn't use drone strikes domestically. Our police forces are still struggling to figure out how to operate and store the volume of MRAPs and assault rifles and grenade launchers that have come from the Pentagon surplus. There are people, I warn my son, who will be afraid of you. You should be afraid of them. I have dinner with a man who is wondering aloud why Bill Cosby's victims didn't come forward sooner. He brought pizza, and we are eating it over greasy cardboard at my dining table. The boys are with their father. I try to explain to him what it feels like to be a woman, to be always weighing risks, gambling. You catch more flies with honey, we are told. But terrible things have sweet teeth, too. We are taught to prepare ourselves, stay guarded, expect bad things to happen. And when they do happen, they will be our fault, because we were warned. It is an unusually warm day in November. We were walking by the chain link fence encircling a swimming pool near our apartment building. My 8-year-old says, I could sneak in there easily. I grab his wrist, kneel to face him. You never break the law, I tell him. I know he will break laws someday. Rebellion is a rite of passage, a way to lash out against the terror of standing on the precipice of the long work of fending for yourself. A year ago, I asked a dear friend, a black poet in his 30s, when he noticed a shift in strangers' attitudes toward him. When did you notice strangers stop treating you like a cute little kid? When I started going places without my mom.
And that was Sima Reza reading from her book, her new debut memoir, When the World Breaks Open. Have your children read your book, or have you read excerpts to them?
I've read excerpts to them. They haven't read it in its entirety. We sort of have a deal. We talked about it until they're no longer dependent on me or their father financially, a sort of the thing we came to.
So they go places because, without their mother.
Yeah, they have to go everywhere without their mother. I want them to form their own opinions, you know, about their father particularly.
Right.
Obviously, I have an opinion, and I can't direct how much of his opinion he offers them about me. But
sure.
One day, even if I convince them that he was a monster, which he is not,
right.
One day they would look clearly and be like, you said that to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want that to be delivered through my art, for sure.
Mm.
But pieces of it I have read to them and talked to them about.
And your family, like, you know, because you do talk about, you know, your parents and your siblings at to some degree in the book. Have they read the book, and how did they receive it?
They have. My sisters are my biggest fans, I think.
Awesome. Right.
They're having their friends buy the book. I was worried because we come from a culture, right, where we have been taught, particularly like Southeast Asian culture, is like all about appearances, right?
Mm-hmm.
And behaving a certain way and projecting a certain, it's not just your goodness, but like what we make up, what kind of family everybody else comes from, right?
Right.
And so I was really nervous about that. And, my oldest sister, I had her, who was probably more traditional, I had her read the book and was very nervous, and she loved it.
Mm-hmm.
My mother has read much of it, but not the dating part. So I kind of want to, like, give her a copy with those pages pulled out. I don't know. I don't know if that's okay, but I feel like it'll serve us both best.
Right, yeah.
She doesn't read that stuff.
You know, I've read the book several times and in preparation, especially for this interview, but just because it's a great book. And, you know, every single time I just open up the book, I can't help but cry at whatever passages I'm reading. And, you know, the book is clearly, a woman's perspective, but it reaches so far beyond gender. You know, it really does. It's such a, I know it sounds like a cliche to say, but it really is. It touches a sort of universal heart, you know, and I felt like at its core, the book is about relationships with oneself and our children and lovers and friends and our place in the world, you know, and I wonder, you know, what do you hope? I know this is kind of the big question, you know, but what do you hope that readers take from your testimony?
Well, first of all, thank you for mm-hmm. saying that, for reading it. I hope that readers take from it this responsibility to think critically about their own lives. None of this stuff that we think is preordained or predetermined about how we're supposed to live our lives, how we're supposed to be treated or treat others, none of it is predetermined.
Right.
It's all up to us. It's all, like, on the table for discussion, which also means that none of it's permanent. Like, who I was yesterday cannot be held to the standard of who I am today. because my goal is to be better.
That's right. Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I can release, you know, sort of look upon her kindly and be like, man, you shouldn't have done that. But you didn't know, you know, and move forward.
You know, there's a real sense of, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, I gather that there's a real sense of almost a kind of suspense of judgment, not just on oneself or the author in this case, but a sort of, you know, on everybody, on all things around you, you know, our situation in general as human beings. You know, there's a kind of suspending of the judgments, and at the same time, a kind of a surrender in that, you know, as you're writing, I felt like the author is like surrendering to the situation, you know, and is that kind of off mark or is that?
I think it's not even, mm-hmm. I'm surrendering or maybe resigned, you know, but I don't think it's resigned. I'm surrendering to the limitations of my knowledge, which is terrifying at the very beginning and then is so freeing to be like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And that's right. Okay. I got the rest of my life to try to know more things.
That said, would you mind sharing one more excerpt, even if it's maybe hopefully a little smaller, a shorter one, because it's we've only got about maybe 3.5 minutes left?
Sure.
Cool. And for the listeners who are just tuning in, we have been speaking with memoirist Sima Reza, and she's going to read us an excerpt from her debut memoir, When the World Breaks Open.
This is called All I Can Give. He's a teenager now, and his fears and grief show up only as anger, usually directed at me. He slams doors and mopes and tells me I'm a terrible mother, glares at me with tears suspended in the web of his long, thick eyelashes, tells me he wishes he was at his father's house, tells me he wishes he lived only with his father. I am not perfect. I am not patient. I try to hug him. He shrugs away. I try to ignore him, and he slams cabinet doors, hits ping pong balls off the dining table until they ricochet off the ceiling and the artwork on the walls. I tell him to calm the down and quit being a dick. This makes him angrier, more certain of how unfit I am as a mother. I am not nice, but I am the nicer parent. I am the nicer parent, but he misses his father, who is in Dhaka, sitting in a hospital room I will not see, while his father is forced alive by a ventilator that expands and contracts his lungs with a hiss and then a release, pushing oxygen through a tube into his prone body. I can imagine this man I used to love suffering through it. I am relieved that I no longer love him, that his grief is no longer my concern. But I know that each loss brings up previous losses, that each bout of grief awakens dormant sadness. And I hold my breath, brace myself to absorb the impact, because the grief of my children will always be mine. All I can do is take them for a hike. It is autumn, and the trail is thick with fallen leaves, concealing the hazards of loose rocks and jutting tree limbs. All I can give them when I am charged with helping them understand things I cannot understand is proof that the world goes on. All I can give them is a river that cuts Maryland from Virginia and stones to throw into it. All I can give them when the river is low is the noble vulnerability of exposed tree roots. All I can give them when the water level rises is the wonder of looking at the places we once stood, places temporarily submerged.
And that was Sima Reza reading from her debut memoir, When the World Breaks Open, which is out with Red Hen Press. And, you know, Sima, there are some fantastic blurbs and endorsements that this book has been, you know, getting and accolades, and it's just fantastic. So, I have no doubt that it's going to continue to do great for you. And I imagine you're probably on a whirlwind book tour, or what's going on? How's the marketing going?
I work a job that I love. And so the tour is not, I mean, I would love to go to lots of places and read in lots of bookstores. You know, and I was in L.A. for AWP. We saw each other there.
Yep.
But I put writing prompts online every week, and mostly that's my tour. Like, the thing about the tour is getting to go out and see people,
right,
who have read your book. And so, like, people write to me, and I'm grateful for it.
And we can find more information about, you know, either where you're going to be at or just updates on what you're up to at your website, right?
SimaReza.com. SEEM as in Mary, A, REZ A.com. It's just my name.
Wonderful. Well, we'll all be keeping an eye out for this book and also, obviously, all the future books that you're writing, because I imagine you're going to have a long, lengthy, wonderful career. It's just been a pleasure speaking with you, Seema. So thank you so much for being with us on Words on a Wire.
Thanks for having me.